Hi,
Hello,
Tiffany.
Suzanne.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. Did I communicate what the attachment was that opened up blank?
No. Were you talking about the survey results?
Yes.
Yeah. So I only sent that to just you and Anne and John and Pat, and it's an Excel file. There were only a small number of people that took the survey.
Don't worry about it. I looked at the homework they did. I was a professor for years. I looked at the homework they did. It's just my poor internet connection, perhaps, or the fact that I have so little software. Afternoon, John.
Hey. Hi,
John, how are you?
good, and you?
Oh, you look so official.
Got my river background.
I love it. Terry,
Yes.
I cannot see you. Did you try to connect by audio? I mean by video?
I did, but let me leave the meeting and I will try to come back. One minute. I see
There
Star
you go. I
Ivy.
think it's coming now. I just put something in. Okay. So,
I got something for each of you.
oh, what do you have for us, John?
Well, so at some point I'm gonna, I saw your notes about people are really interested in promotion. And I think that's where I turn it, to someone like you and Suzanne to say, how can the MRPC help promote people? So I'm gonna look for you guys on that. And then I had a great conversation just an hour or so ago with Karen Bradford, the superintendent of Arkansas Post. And she says many of the people coming to her place are doing the Great River Road. And her big Great River Road sign is faded and bad, and she needs a new one. So she wants a new Great River Road sign. So there you go.
I appreciate you saying that to me. I don't know Mrs. Bradford, but I did know her predecessor, Ed Wood.
Yep. Karen's great.
And I delivered a new sign to Ed Wood.
Well, it sounds like Ed Wood wasn't always on top of things in his later years there. Give Karen a call. She said she'd be happy to have anybody call her from Arkansas, talk to her about what she's doing, how she's doing it. She's great. Her cadence of her voice is very similar to yours.
I
So
hope that's a compliment.
it is. It is. She's wonderful. And she's very, very good. So she's fairly new as superintendent there, but she's doing great things.
Just to be
Pat.
sure, John, her name is Karen
Hello.
Bradford.
Yep, Karen Bradford.
I'll give her a call. Thank you. Hey, Pat.
Hello, how are you?
Doing fine.
So is there
Good afternoon.
anything else that the four of us need to talk about before I start letting people in? I just handpicked us for now, just to make sure we were all on and ready to go. I have eight people waiting right now to get in, and it looks like most of them are using their names. Oh, here's one person labeled as sticker gal, so I'm not sure who this is, but I sent you, I mean, all of you should have received the email with everyone's registration, but then I sent you that compilation this morning of where we were at, and it doesn't look like we got any after that. I'm more than fine talking with Terry about, promotion. I think a lot of the information we were trying to collect online had to do with that. So we can certainly talk about that. And I will look for questions and I will watch us on time. And I'll let you know when we're, 15 minutes out or, I'll just send you a note.
I'm thinking I have 12, 15 minutes. I hope it lasts. Could be even 10. It depends on how fast I talk. I've got a note at the top, talk slower. But Pat, is there anything you want to say?
No, I think just looking at your agenda, I just think this is just an opportunity to say we're all in this together. When the people begin to come out of their houses, they're more than likely going to go to places more, or are in more regions closer to where they live than they've ever done before. So they'll have a lot of new people who said, you know, I've lived here 30 years, but I've never seen this. So I just, you know, I just want to encourage people that I know this will someday be over and they're going to have visitors again. So we got to get prepared.
I think it's also important for both of you to mention the Mississippi River Parkway Commission and the Culture and Heritage Committee. And in introducing yourselves, you're both co-chairing that, and to really talk about that being one of the four technical committees, the one that approved, you know, our network of interpretive centers, and one that, you know, from the committee going in there on an annual basis to be able to really just communicate and sort of get any new information from the interpretive center and being sort of the frontline person from each of the state commissions. So I just think it, you know, we're doing this and I want to make sure that it kind of puts in perspective who you two are, you know, as Terry leads us, you know, this
I got that in the introductions.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's five technical committees. Think of endowment. There's five technical committees. And I will certainly add the technical committee information, one of our technical committees.
I think we usually call it the four technical committees. There's an endowment committee and nominations, and those are like more of the operating committees. But, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Okay,
no,
well, if everyone's good, we're at 3 o'clock. We have 11 people. I'm going to let everybody in, okay?
Awesome.
All right. Awesome. Hello, welcome everyone from the Mississippi River Parkway Commission National Office. We're going to wait just a couple of minutes for everyone to get their audio and video going. If you have chosen to participate on today's webinar with both audio and video. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, we're going to take just a minute and let everyone get settled.
That's got my.
We're excited to say we're going to have a full screen today. Lots of different interpretive centers throughout our 10 states were able to participate. We are recording this, so if you know of some of your interpretive centers or staff that were unable to participate, once we have the recording loaded online, I'll be sharing an email with all of our interpretive centers, letting them know where they can find the recording. And it is 3:03, so I think we will get started, and I'll look out for anyone who jumps on as we continue. Thank you again for joining us.
Good afternoon. I thank you for prioritizing our very first Interpretive Center Roundtable and joining us via Zoom or those who've audio called in. I am Terry McCullough. I am the pilot or national president promoting Great River Road tourism through the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. The commission hosts several technical committees. Those technical committees have worked diligently to improve tourism. Those people who are joining us today may or may not have met our co-chairs. But let's first take a look at who's participating. There were about 12 pre-registered. If you hear your park or center or museum or site, would you identify yourself? From Arkansas, there's the Mississippi River State Park. See you, Kara. Lakeport, hello, Ruth. Helena Museum of Phillips County. They're not here yet. Historic Dice Colony and the Johnny Cash Boyhood Home. Adam?
Hello. Hey, how are you?
Hello, Adam. Fine. Kentucky, is there a representative from Columbus Belmont State Park? What about a representative from Kentucky's Wycliffe Mound State Historic Site? Iowa, someone representing the National Pearl Button Museum?
Terry Eagle, the director.
Good to have you, Terry. Good name you've got there, I must admit. The Sawmill Museum.
Hi, this is Matt Barbs, and actually Derek can give a shout out. He's setting up a river viewing webcam right now. So hi from Clinton.
Hello. Great. And the historic Fort Snelling, Tom.
Hello, everyone.
What about the Charles? I'm sorry. Hello, Tom. We're glad to have you representing historic Fort Snelling. Is someone here from the Charles Lindbergh House and Museum?
Melissa.
Hello,
Peterson.
Melissa.
I'm the site manager.
All right. And from the Mississippi River Visitor Center, is the manager here? From Missouri, the Mark Twain Boyhood Home.
Hello.
James, glad to have you here. From Wisconsin, the Fort Crawford Museum, is there a representative here? Did I miss anyone?
I was just going to say, Kyle, introduce yourself.
Yeah, I think I took myself off mute. I'm Kyle from the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, and I am the point person for our visitor center here with John, our superintendent.
Good to know you, Kyle. Thank you. And
thank
Kyle
you.
Brings up those people who are going to be directing us today. But I've got to admit, I see some commissioners. I see Iowa's Martin. Hello, Martin.
Hello.
And Derek, Mississippi, said he was going to be joining us. He's not here. Let's go forward with technical committees. When I started, I mentioned to you that we promote Great River Road tourism through technical committees, and we call ourselves the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. We have two co-chairs for Culture and Heritage Committee here today. These committees work diligently to provide support for you, but this is our very first roundtable, and we're glad you're here. From Marianna, Arkansas, one of the co-chairs is Pat Aldrich. Pat is a commissioner. She has co-chaired Culture and Heritage for 2 years. She's a retired educator. She is a prodigious manager of details. If you have not had contact with Pat, that means that your Great River Road emblem on your website is doing what it's supposed to do, because she's consistent in that. Our other co-chair is from St. Paul, Minnesota. Kyle has already stated that John is the superintendent of his national park, and that is the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area. John Athenson's park is actually the Mississippi River, and he has developed innovative ways to bring people onto his park. Dr. Atheson was gracious to visit MRPC, and he volunteered for the Culture and Heritage Committee. The commissioners saw his expertise and elected him co-chair in September of 2019. We're going to begin our roundtable with some of the topics that you answered on the online survey, and I'm going to ask that Dr. Atheson to please start our problem-solving discussion.
Thanks, Terry. That's a really helpful setup for this. Thank you all for joining us. I keep waiting for Martin to do his General Patton imitation with that big book. So this is supposed to be light and interesting. You know, there's onerous are difficult. It's a round table, so let's keep it a round table. You know, we really need to make this a conversation. So I want to do that with you. And, you know, once we get into the round table, you don't have to wait for me to talk. If you want to, you know, if Kyle says something and Martin wants to reply, just reply. You don't have to wait. This is a conversation. Just pretend we're around a table together. This is your chance for you to explore, you know, what might best work for your situation. Take away what helps you the most. I sit on several calls weekly with the Midwest region, the National Park Service, which is headquartered in Omaha, Nebraska. It includes 13 states, six of which lie on the Mississippi River. I also sit on weekly calls with the five national park units in Minnesota. And as she did today, the state park director for Minnesota joined us. Because we really want to make sure we're in sync with the other big organizations that are similar to ours and connect with us. On my calls, I've been struck by the similarity between the National Park Service sites and the Great River Road sites. You might think that's kind of odd, but it really hit home to me as I looked through all those sites on the Great River Road. And the similarity is our variety of differences between who we all are. We're so different, each of us. And it's so much like the National Park Service. I keep telling people, you can't approach the National Park Service with a one-size-fits-all approach because we're just too different. There's 61 units in the 13 states of the Midwest region. We have big natural parks like Badlands in South Dakota, Voyageurs in northern Minnesota. We have small parks whose primary features are historic, like Herbert Hoover National Historic Site in Iowa, Ulysses Grant National Historic Site in St. Louis, and Lincoln Home in Springfield, Illinois. We have American Indian sites like Evagee Mounds in Iowa and Arkansas Post in Arkansas. And we have urban sites like Gateway Arch in St. Louis and Pullman in Chicago. The Southeast region brings in parks like Vicksburg National Battlefield and Jazz and John Lafitte in New Orleans. Now, as I went through all those, how alike are all those parks? How similar? As you can imagine, their setups and how they're oriented. And so the Great River Road parks are visitor centers and sites are very, very much like that. And then sites like mine, the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area, which includes 72 miles of the Mississippi River flowing through the Twin Cities. So it's this variety of sites that is so similar that makes a one-size-fits-all solution to this COVID-19 crisis impossible. It's just, we're all so different. We really have to look today at what's working out there for some, what's working for others, and what do we take away from this? So my principal visitor center is a Great River Road Visitor Center in the Science Museum of Minnesota. Thanks again to Kyle for being here from there. And on March 13th, the Science Museum closed. And so we had to close on March 13th as well. We don't know when that museum's going to be open again. It could be late this summer or early fall before it's opened. We normally see 160,000 visitors. I don't even know what the guests for visitation this year is going to be, but it's going to be a lot less. We also manage the Upper Sandy Falls Lock Visitor Center in Minneapolis for the Corps of Engineers, and that's supposed to be open on Memorial Day. I'm not thinking it's going to open Memorial Day. We'll be lucky if we open again midsummer, if not late summer. I think we can open if we put people out on the big lock surface because it's like three, the size of over a football field, several football fields. We can really space people out, but we won't put them in the enclosed observation deck. I don't know that we can get them in an elevator and crowd them in. So we have to think about those things. I and my staff have been teleworking for 2 months. So we're really deep into the whole teleworking thing and it's going very, very well. So I'm trying to figure out what we can open, how and when we can open, what staff can do now, how we can do anything safely for staff, volunteers, and partners and visitors down the road. So how are we approaching this? And so one of the primary things we get hammered home to us by the Midwest Region Office is, and the National Park Service overall is, take a risk mitigation approach. For everything you want to do, whether it's opening a visitor center, doing a program, evaluate the risk. List all the risk aspects you can think of, and then develop a mitigation approach to those. And then see if the mitigations are enough to compensate for the risk that you would put yourselves, your staff, your volunteers, your partners, and the public through. And we have to actually make that part of an administrative record and keep it. So everything my staff wants to do, I put them through that risk mitigation assessment process, and it's worked really well. And it's worked well from this perspective, is that the staff want to know they're safe and that the managers are thinking about them. But there's other staff who want to know I'm taking care of the staff I'm putting in that position, because they really think of themselves as a family and as a, you know, a single group of people. They want to know we're taking care of everybody. So that's why it's important to go through that process. Another thing is to think inside, outside. I remember on one of the calls with the region, someone said, you know what? You got to take your visitor centers outside. And it kind of hit me, because it's hard, especially with historic homes and historic buildings, or visitor centers, to put people inside. There's some studies out there that have shown that even a 6-foot social distancing inside a building, inside an office space, is not enough. You could maybe put 3 people where you used to put 10 and still infect someone potentially. So you have to really think carefully. But the same article points out that if you bring them outside and do things outside, it's pretty darn safe. You can do pretty successful things for outside programming. So we've had a lot of national parks close their visitor centers, but their grounds are still open. You can walk around the grounds of historic buildings. You can go around the natural sites. The parks themselves have mostly stayed open. And we've done that with our Coldwater Spring property at Fort Snelling, a 29-acre open space that we're letting people come and visit. And that's going really well. So what else are we doing? Kyle and some of the other ed intern people on my staff have really been doing an exceptional job. We shifted from in-person to virtual within the last 6 weeks in a pretty phenomenal way. We have a really signature program. We put kids on paddle boats with the Paddleford Packet Boat Company. We turn it into classrooms. We put a couple hundred people on the boats. If they go station to station. Well, that ended with schools closing. And we don't want to put a whole bunch of people packed into a boat right now. So that had to stop. And so what my staff did with our partner, the Mississippi Park Connection and Hamline University, they made an online version of it, a video version, and they just released it. And it was covered by the news channel in Twin Cities yesterday. They had one of our lead formal education interpretation person talking about it. So that's up and ready to go. We also started a Ranger Coffee with a Ranger program, where twice a week now we'll have someone like Kyle, who did a mushroom thing, and he talked about mushrooms and nature. And it gets thousands of views. These Coffee with a Ranger programs, we have over 30,000 views on those programs already. And if you want to ask Kyle about what his program was about and how we do it, you know, please do so. We're also going to try to put people out in programs on the river, but not like we used to. We're talking about doing a program for 10 people in kayaks. I would normally not approve that, because it would seem like the bang for the buck just isn't there. But we can't do bigger programs right now. So we will shift to those smaller programs and do, you know, bring people to the river that way is what we're looking at. We're also doing habitat restoration events. But again, it's 10 people or less. They bring their own gloves. They drive separately. We're figuring out all this ways to mitigate it and identify the risks. And lastly, I'll just mention volunteers. We see over 5,000 volunteers a year. We rely heavily on volunteers for our education programming, for our habitat restoration projects, for our visitor centers, and they're mostly retired. So it's going to be hard to bring our volunteers back. We got to make sure we know how to do it. One advantage we have is that there's 2 national trails, Ice Age Trail and North Country Trail, that we work with, and they're all volunteer driven. So they have to develop a program to bring back their volunteers. They have to submit it to the region. The region's got to approve it. So no, we know once they got it done, it's going to be a great protocol. So we're looking to them to see how they do it. So with that kind of overview of what we're doing and how we're looking right now, you know, we promoted our park and our programs through Facebook primarily. We've done a couple of press releases. I'd also like, you know, Suzanne or Terry to say something about, you know, how the National Mississippi Parkway Commission can help you do promotion as well. So that's my piece. Let's get into a good conversation. I'm having a hard time with my hand gestures because I'm used to looking around. I'm looking at you on one screen, and I know my camera's on another, but it's like I want to look at people's faces as I look around the room, and it's hard to adjust.
Well, this is Suzanne from the National Office. And again, I just want to thank everyone for participating. These are crazy times ahead, and we're among it. But I want to let you know from the National Office perspective what we've been doing and continuing to do to promote the Great River Road and you, our interpretive centers, our attractions along the Great River Road. Right now, obviously, we all know in travel and tourism, we've been really promoting the idea of dreaming now, travel later. That's really an approach that has been taken nationally. And we've continued with that type of messaging. Certainly, we have an endless number of scenic spots along the Great River Road. And as we are in the spring season, looking on to summer, we've really been sharing a lot of visuals that are just scenic and allowing people to think about us and to ask people to share their own pictures. And certainly our engagement and activity looking at our social media has continued to be quite strong. Some of the information that we've asked from you in the different surveys that we have sent out have asked for any information regarding what of your center might be open. As John mentioned, are there outdoor things that are open? Some of you have trails, some of you have interpretation outdoors that people could abide by being safe and being able to look at. Those are some of the things that in the coming weeks we can be able to promote as people maybe are starting to move around slowly and doing so in a safe way. If you have images, any virtual tours, and you haven't already provided those to us by survey, I strongly encourage you to do so. We will take as much content as we can in terms of images, in terms of video, anything that provides us with some virtual information that we can share with so many of the people who are interested in the Great River Road. Certainly, I hope that all of you like us on Facebook and follow our social media. It's a great outlet. We have over 40,000 people who like our page. We get very good engagement on it. We do have a little bit of an advertising budget. It's a pretty small amount, but again, based on the audience at hand, people who are interested in visiting your centers, you know, we continue to get good engagement, and we really do try to focus as much of that on really centers like yourselves, as well as the communities that you're in, and all of the businesses and attractions in between along the Great River Road. ExperienceMississippiRiver.com, our website, we continue to get quite a bit of traffic. I think most people will agree over the last 2 months, there's been a lot of web activity as people are maybe have a little more time on their hands and have been looking online at things. And our site has been no different in terms of still getting quite a bit of traffic. I certainly hope, and as part of being our interpretive centers, we have links over to each of your sites, and we certainly hope that you have that reciprocal link going to our site, ExperienceMississippiRiver.com, as well as our social media, the Facebook, as I mentioned. And so viewers can still be able to get the information and then link over to the interpretive centers. They can utilize the information to be able to someday be able to plan their trip, as we're really promoting trip by Great River Road, by auto. And as we've all looked at travel in the coming weeks and months, people are going to be traveling by car first. And I know a lot of the information that you shared, those who took the surveys, you know, we asked how far away most of your visitors you thought would come by. I mean, all very consistent with what we're seeing and what we're anticipating, and that people will start with a couple hours, and then as people get more comfortable, be able to travel a little further from there. In our office, we are still taking phone calls. We are still taking fulfillment of our Great River Road map. We printed the map. The last time we printed it was last spring. And the map does include all of you, all of the interpretive centers, as well as your contact information and your address. And we are still fulfilling that map. And I'll actually share with you that we just looked at our first quarter reports, and we actually had twice as many map requests in first quarter of 2020 as we did in 2019. We continue to send out in one or two requests, so sending out maps that people might request one or two copies of. We've sent out, last year that quantity was around 15,000. That doesn't include some of the bulk orders that we might send out through the states. The states have their own supplies. These are just people who are requesting through phone call. We have a toll-free number, requesting through our website, experiencemississippiriver.com, or engaging again with us through social media. So despite the fact that travel has been slow these past few months, and many of you are not fully open, most of you aren't, there's still a lot of interest building as people are trying to plan and really look at the Great River Road and the different amenities along the Great River Road. On an annual basis, the Mississippi River Parkway Commission does do a number of promotions. We usually do three promotions. Hopefully all of you are familiar with our most popular in the fall, Drive the Great River Road Month. We started that several years back on the, I believe it was the 75th anniversary of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. And we celebrate that every September. We think every month of the year is fantastic time to highlight and travel the Great River Road, but fall in its full bounty of color and foods and just all the things that people love about travel, it's a great month to experience. And we are very hopeful that we'll be able to continue that promotion this fall. We're also looking at two other promotions, and all of it is really dependent on what we see for travel over the next couple of months. I know many of you have continued to communicate with us at the national office to be able to participate in some of those promotions, where we've provided you with keychains, we've provided you with postcards, different themed rack cards based on the different themes of our interpretive centers. And those are all different promotions that we do in the national office that are funded from promotion within the 10 states to be able to really get people out and traveling the Great River Road. So that's kind of a lot of information in a snapshot, but again, just to continue, just to recap, experiencemississippiriver.com. Please make sure that you're linking over to our website, as we are linking to all of yours. And we are continuing to see quite a bit of traffic. We're continuing to fulfill and send maps. If any of you need maps, you need to really contact your state commissions to be able to coordinate that. But we are continuing to do fulfillment. Please, social media, take a look at the Great River Road Facebook page, engage with us, comment, share information, especially as you're open, and keep an eye out for promotions happening later this summer and then into the fall with Drive the Great River Road. So a lot of things just gearing up, and we're certainly hopeful that we can safely send travel up and down the Great River Road in the months to come. Any questions on anything I very quickly shared, or anything, Terry, or Pat or John, that you'd like to add?
Yes, I do want to add, in conjunction to what Suzanne has told you about Drive the Great River Road and how successful that promotion has been over the last 7 years. I mentioned at the start we had several technical committees. One of those technical committees is transportation, and they, by this September, we'll have some information about All American Road. They have applied. Our entire 10-state corridor could be promoted through National Scenic Byway and other federal highway promotion items. This is an opportunity. Perhaps 17, 18 years ago, our Great River Road became a National Scenic Byway. At that time, there was a great deal of money that was used for improvements along the road,
pull-offs, way-showing, support to interpretive centers. It's our hope that that money will be there again. Now, at this moment, the government is famous for having programs and no funding. Forgive me for those of you who work for the government. But we do know that a All-American Road designation will be a priority. There are only 31 All-American roads in the entire United States. And if we are awarded that, we're looking for funding that will follow, that we will certainly use in our Drive the Great River Road September program. But we'll also, but we will be learning, as you will, about opportunities to promote the interpretive centers along the Great River Road. Is there a question about that? Is there a comment to John or to Pat?
I have to unmute myself.
John?
So, you know, unless Pat has something, I really want to hear from all of you. You know, you answered in your survey, if you answered the survey, you know, you open, close. I mean, what are the issues you're facing and dealing with? And there's a lot of, one of the common themes was anxiety. There seems to be a lot of anxiety. So somebody tell me something about that. I'd like to know.
I could kind of speak up for the National Pearl Button Museum and the fact that the button industry in Muscatine is winding down, and we had two 100-plus-year-old factories, family industries, close their doors. And they've just dumped tons of artifacts onto this museum. So in a way, being closed has been a blessing because we've gathered all that. We have to assimilate all that information. We're known as the Pearl of the Mississippi because of the pearl button industry, the freshwater pearl button industry. It was founded in Muscatine in Iowa. It took shells from 19 states around the state of Iowa, shipped here by barge and railroad car in the heyday of the pearl button. And this history has expanded so widely that we're really using this time to catch up and to expand upon the history so that this nation knows about this national growth story that's not in the history books. So we have used this time as a blessing to expand upon this story of the Pearl Button in Muscatine.
I think that's a theme that I'd like to hear from others too on, is that that's what my staff has done, is, and I told them to do, is how do we take advantage of this time in ways that are creative and productive? So I told you some of ours.
I can speak a little bit on that, John, and just tell other folks a little bit about what our other things our interpretive team have been up to since the stay-at-home order and we started teleworking here in Minnesota. A lot of web work, a lot of .gov and partner websites work. That means we have all had a lot of time to gain new skills that we haven't had before. So we've all really taken advantage of that. And communication between our staff has been really good with Zoom calls like this. And in our case, we use Microsoft Teams. So that's been really good. Other things, as a frontline service, visitor services representative like myself, on the normal day-to-day, especially coming into the busiest time that we have during the summer, concerns and questions from my coworkers and, of course, future seasonals as well will most, I can probably think that they will share these concerns too, is one of the biggest things is here in Minnesota, our stay-at-home order is lifted, this coming Sunday. And we're moving past that, but we're still teleworking at home. But as John said, we'll be doing a few public programs related to canoeing, biking, and looking at outdoor visitor center in St. Anthony Falls in Minneapolis. And one of the biggest concerns that staff have is being in a big city, in urban area like we are with both of our visitor centers, is we don't have any law enforcement park rangers on staff. should we act as law enforcement to step in where things get kind of ugly with the public, which there's a great chance it will during this really weird time. So communication has been really great with our staff in trying to brainstorm, is there verbal escalation, de-escalation training that needs to happen with our staff? And that's being talked about right now. So that's one of the most important things that have come up with our staff in the last 2 days. So that is about all I have to say right there.
Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, Erica Rivers, who's the director of Minnesota State Parks, mentioned today that now that some of their people are getting back out and the public is seeing them, you know, there's this danger that you become the face of your community, or you become the face of the government. You're somebody official, and then people kind of unload on you, or they just don't. You want them to wear a face mask, and they don't. And we've seen someone killed over that already. So this de-escalation thing is something we're starting to think about: is how do you deal with visitors who may not respect your staff or your situation? Are others dealing with that or thinking about it?
Well, here in Missouri, we're reopening next week, and we're looking at a lot of those different issues, and I've been on a lot of these different calls with other museums, both in Missouri and nationally, and yeah, there are a lot of people that seem to be concerned about that. Some are going to ask their visitors to wear masks, some aren't, and we haven't quite decided yet. We're going to have them available and encourage them at a minimum, but yeah, I'm very concerned for my front desk workers if there's belligerent people who aren't happy with whatever rules that we are following.
James, remind me who you're with.
Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum in Hannibal.
Okay, great.
This is Nancy Cass from Fort Snelling. You know, it's a big concern because we're seeing it even in the stores. I've seen people, you know, get upset with people who don't have masks on if they feel they should have. And it is a reality of when we reopen. We do have procedures in place that we work with staff on as far as de-escalation or procedures if we have a visitor upset about anything. So I feel like we're in a pretty good place with that. That being said, I think we're in uncharted territory with this whole thing, and it's very emotional for a lot of people. One of our big concerns is not only the visitors being okay with coming in, how do our staff feel about it? And that's going to be a range of feeling, I think. Some people are going to be, yep, I'm okay with this distancing that we're going to put in place. Other people probably will not be. So that will be a challenge as we move forward with that and managing this, you know, how the staff are feeling with it. So I think there's things ahead of us that we're not probably even aware of yet.
Thanks, Nancy.
For us at the Charles Lindbergh House and Museum, we're a house museum. Like, you cannot social distance in a 1920s, 19-teens bungalow. It's not built for that. So if we open this summer, it's probably going to be not our regular program. We furloughed staff. It is just me figuring out this program until we have models in place that we think we can be financially feasible to open back up under. So that is the work I am doing to pivot on, like, how do you even be open in these different circumstances in a place that doesn't work well in those circumstances. So I have a feeling it's going to be a lot of reinventing over the next few weeks.
Yes, I know that because I had to work on the All-American Road nomination for Minnesota, and wrote something about the house. It's got good outdoor space that takes you down to the river, though, right? Would that be open?
Yeah, the grounds are always open. So people have been enjoying them throughout our stay-at-home order because we're right across the road from the state park. So that's been our local get out and enjoy. And we do have some interpretive signs. But again, with the financial crisis coming along with it, I don't see a whole lot of new signs being put in place unless they're really quickly made and locally made. And so we're having all kinds of conversations about what is good enough, what is, you know, not letting the perfect get in the way of the good, what used to be our standard, what is still our standard, kind of a thing. Like, is it okay for me to print something up, laminate it, and then duct tape it to something that already exists? You know, like, what is our standard of interpretation and how quick and dirty can we be with some of this kind of stuff? But yeah, the grounds are open. People are enjoying them. So at least that way we can connect. One of the big things I'm thinking is outdoor walking tours, because we've got the whole farmstead, which we don't interpret in that way. The WPA was also in the area and we already have a self-guided walking tour with that. So promoting that even more for small family groups to enjoy, possibly creating a guided experience around that. But yeah, trying to balance out the financial as well as the virus part of the crisis.
John, Terry, and Pat, I just wanted to recognize we've had a few people who have joined the call since we introduced ourselves, not to put anybody on the spot here, but I can see Shelley Ritter is the executive director with the Delta Blues Museum in Clarksdale, Mississippi is one of them, and then maybe a few others. I'm sorry if I don't recognize your number, but please take a moment to introduce yourselves, if you would, please, if you joined us and have not shared with us who you are and what center you are representing today. Shelley, are you there?
Wait. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can, Shelley.
Okay. Hey.
Hello. Did you want to share anything, Shelley, about how things are going at your center? I know you shared a little bit a few weeks ago on the marketing committee. Have things changed in the couple weeks since we've chatted?
Well, we're just trying to make sense of what the president says versus what our governor says versus what our mayor says. And I had a board meeting this week, and so far we're closed through the end of May. I'm not sure what we're going to do in June, but as far as I know, we'll remain shuttered, and we'll discuss it at the board meeting and go from there. We're just trying to follow virus outbreaks and different policies and mandates as best we can. But all reports of the tourism industry recovery is 18 to 24 months. I know Tennessee is opening up, and I've been working with Memphis, and they've done an actual nice plan of phases, but I think everybody from the surrounding states may, you know, swoop in, and they may have to change their plan too.
Shelley, you mentioned trying to find common ground between the words of the president and the Mississippi governor and the mayor of Clarksdale. Ultimately, who's going to direct the opening of your museum, which is actually in the city limits?
My board.
Okay. I hope everybody has a board or an executive director or a group of staff who are as interested in opening as your group in Mississippi. I hope so.
I think so,
Brian. Were there others that joined us? I see an audio connection. Is that one of the ones who might have joined us?
Hi, Terry. I'm out here. This is Chris Miller in Minnesota from the Minnesota Commission, just listening in with you all today and appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Glad to have you, Chris. Sorry I cut you off, John. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, you know, that I thought Shelley had a good comment about, you know, the different levels of government and what state you're in and what city you're in. And I know that we're getting directions from the White House and Office of Budget Management and Budget and from Office of Personnel Management and from the Department of the Interior and from the Midwest region and from the state. So it's, and then we're supposed to come up with our plans for what we're going to do, you know, and so it's really complex as you look at, you know, what guidance do I need to anchor on and follow? And again, what I said at the start of this is that we're all so different as parks and as Great River Road visitor centers. It's really complex to figure out what do I take from all of this and make into my plan? And so that's one of the things I'm working on right now. Well, we will take guidance from, you know, our national offices in the end. And this, I was going to point out, Suzanne, I don't know if you remember if you did this or not, but if you don't want to speak up on the phone, you can put something in the chat and ask a question there. And Suzanne's tracking the chat box, so you can ask a question there. But I certainly like hearing from people in person.
You know, I'm thinking about my staff at the Pearl Button Museum. There's four of us. Three of us are 65 and over. And one of us were to come down with the COVID virus, that would put the whole museum back as far as operation goes. We'd be closed down. And so, you know, it's a very precarious situation for museums. You know, such as us, and you know, being so small, so yeah, we have to be very careful about social distancing and wearing masks and gloves. We've done a lot with disinfecting the museum and marketing that we're taking a positive action toward it. But still, it's our staff that's the mainstay in the operation, and it's only going to take one of us to knock the whole operation out.
So what steps, so you said you listed some of the steps. Are people coming in? You said you're closed, actually.
Yes, we are.
So fortunately, people aren't coming in, and you're not having a lot of contact with people right now. It's going to be more community spread issues for you.
Right, and Muscatine, Iowa is very high on the virus spread at the moment. The governor is not allowing us to open till the end of the month, which is okay with us. Like we mentioned, we've kept our mind off of it with all of the artifacts that are coming in from the button companies that are closing. But again, looking forward, when we do open our doors, three of us are at that age where it would only take one of us to be exposed, and then the whole staff would have to go into isolation. So that's, you know, as hard as we all want to work to open our doors, we're really having a hard time wondering what the world's going to be as far as museums and tourism.
You know, another commonality I noticed was people thought that tourism was going to be local. It was just going to be from people, you know, from your, so to speak, neighborhood, 50, 100 miles away. And the interesting thing is, when Effigy Mounds in northeastern Iowa had to close, and the reason was they were getting so many visitors, but they said on one of the calls of them that they had, you know, cars in the parking lot with seven different states of license plates. People are traveling, and they're going to travel nationally, as some of the stuff I'm hearing. They're not going to go abroad, but they might travel within the United States more. So I don't know how your communities are thinking about that.
Yeah. people traveling from out of state. Here, I know Arkansas State Parks, we've identified the different hotspots. And so if they're wanting to come to the park, they actually have to quarantine in their site for 14 days. But that's definitely been a concern for us as well, people coming in from other states. We are actually opening the visitor center back up tomorrow. we'll have the personal protective equipment and taking as many steps as we can. We're opening up in phases as well. So my job with interpretation, that'll probably be the last one to come back, but it's the steps we're taking.
So what's your situation like? I mean, so when someone comes to visit you, where are they going? How close are you interacting? Where are they going into a building?
That's a good question. We're a pretty big park. We cover two towns, have lots of trails and two boat ramps. So for the most part, we've seen people actually respecting the social distancing rules. It's a little worrisome though with opening back up and possibly having as many, like a full ground. For the visitor center, of course, only 10 people at a time will be allowed. They have options to spread out. Sorry, that was a long way of saying they have options to spread out.
Kyle posed a good question here for those that are giving public programs right now. Kara mentioned they're opening up their visitor center tomorrow, but for those who are doing public programs right now, what safety precautions have worked for you? Are there others that can share any of that either are open or opening soon, what your transitional phase plans are?
Well, for the Mark Twain Boyhood Museum, since our tour actually takes people along the side of the building and they just kind of step into alcoves, we are fortunate that we can pretty much bring people through in limited groups. Any of the programming type stuff that we have done is being held off till later in the summer, when we're hopefully allowed to put more people in, because we can probably put a total of 15 people in our auditorium, maintaining the levels necessary, and that's hardly worth putting on the programs if we have to keep it that small. So, but as far as the other stuff, we're just dividing up our exhibit areas, and hopefully people will self distance and stay away from each other and be able to go through and still enjoy things.
Tom had a question for you, Kara. When you have someone regulating do you have someone who's regulating the 10 people, or are you expecting people to self-regulate?
Yeah, thank you. I just saw the question. I'm a little bit slow to answer. Sorry.
No problem.
We will have someone self-regulate. Sorry. We will have someone regulating. One of the good things about programming being the last thing to come back is that'll be my job for the next 2 weeks. Monitoring that and kind of walking the visitor center and, parking lot.
What has the I'm curious, as I talked a lot about the national office and the engagement that we've had in terms of website activity, social media activity, people requesting maps. I'm curious, with your centers, how much communication or activity has there been? People emailing or calling in, asking questions about what you're doing differently or when you anticipate opening, people engaging in you through different means. Can you share with me a bit of what you're hearing and seeing out there?
With the Minnesota Historical Society, we've announced that we're closed through the end of June. So we at Lindbergh House haven't really gotten like those kind of questions yet, but we've definitely seen an uptick in our social media. We've put more effort into social media, at least I have, because that is the one avenue I still have left to communicate with guests and to interpret. So really planning on how can we do that.
I think Fort Snelling, the same as Melissa just said, you know, the public knows we're closed through the end of June. So we really haven't had a lot of people saying, you know, when are you opening? But again, as Melissa said, we've really pushed forward our social media presence. And if anything, this has pushed us to look at new ways to put programming out there. And I think it's kind of pushed us into the future somewhat. And I think we've known this would be ahead of us, and now we're there. So I guess if there's a good side of it, we're looking at things we probably need to look at anyway. And our social media presence throughout MNHS has been very well received and much appreciated.
Well, that's good. And I think for all of you, if as you think about your centers and being able to share information right now on social, people are looking for it. And with today's cell phones and capability, doing video is not like it used to be. What you can share on social media, what you really want to share on social media is, you know, what a visitor might see or what, you know, what they can see when you open back up. It can easily be done on a cell phone. Short video clips, people are not necessarily, you know, engaging in long clips, but short clips that show part of an exhibit. These are certainly the types of things to give them a preview, a sneak peek, to engage them into coming in and seeing more for themselves or seeing up close. And I certainly encourage you to do it. It's a good time to play around with things. We work with a number of tourism entities across the country, and that's what everybody is doing right now, is really thinking outside the box. And I think as you just mentioned, in some cases, thinking about things that, you know, we're maybe on the rainy day or the list upcoming, and now you actually have the chance to do it. And I think an opportunity to be able to connect with people who could be new visitors, people who were there previously, people who want to share information. All of you are providing some type of education, interpretation. There's a lot to be learned, and that is certainly one of many reasons people are going online and engaging right now. So I encourage you to think about that, and don't feel intimidated to be able to just pull your phone out and show a little bit of what one might see. And Carl, for you guys opening the visitor center tomorrow, I mean, there's a lot you could do with that to make it exciting to be able to show that, you know, you are open, and yep, here's what you can expect, you know, keeping social distancing, recommending masks, what, you know, whatever your protocol is or are. But there's a lot that I think you could do to kind of build the anticipation and excitement with that. People obviously want to get out. It's just a matter of personally making that decision of based on where they live, when it's safe, and when individually they feel safe to be able to move on and do. And I think the more information we can share on what we're doing once we do open, the better it's going to be. People are going to want more information. And certainly if you share any of those things within your social, we'll definitely share those within the Great River Road social channels as well. We're always looking for content and really want to be able to connect with all of you on promoting the things that travelers and visitors can experience and see and learn from you.
See, we're getting down to the last minute or so here. I don't know if you or Terry wanted to kind of sum it up or close it up.
John, I'd like to just say a word. This is Pat from Mariana. And and I was just wanting all of the interpreting centers to understand that Mississippi River Parkway Commission, all we're doing is promoting this Great River Road, but the Great River Road is only wonderful and exciting because of the interpretation of the heritage and the culture that is presented by each one of those centers. And it's so exciting when you start at the north of the river and go all the way to New Orleans where it goes in. All along the way, it's just a different story. And you'd think that there would be just one story, but it's so many stories. And there's just a great appreciation for each center and how they tell the story that makes it exciting. So if one person gets on the road and drives for 400 miles, they get a bunch of different stories. And my hats are off to the Interpretive Center leaders as they promote their programs and engage and educate the public. Thanks to everyone.
Thank you, Pat. We are at the end of our 4 o'clock, our 1 hour time span. I've noticed that chat has picked up. If you would like to communicate, particularly about promoting along the Great River Road and asking Suzanne what your destination management group offers you, please feel free to offer things from your interpretive center for us to further promote. I must say, I'm just well pleased that so many people have taken the time to be part of our very first roundtable for interpretive center support. If you have thoughts or summaries of this, or you find this valuable and you would like for us to try this again, I hope you'll communicate with Suzanne. I've got to thank Pat and John for their bravery in starting the very first one. And I do appreciate you all a great deal. Are there any other comments for the good of the order?
Always hard in the middle of something to see how the end of it comes, but this too shall pass is a great piece of advice.
Thank you, Martin. If there's nothing else, Suzanne, you're going to instruct us on how to leave the meeting.
You can just end your participation. But again, as everyone said, feel free to call the national office. Feel free to email. Any of my staff are there to help, but certainly you can connect with me. The more information I know about your interpretive centers, when you're opening, anything that you have going on right now, photos, anything, please share them with us, and we'd love to be able to help promote you and travel along the Great River Road. Thank you all so much for your time and participation, and we look forward to hopefully doing this again soon and talking about our reopening transitions. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.